for Kids panel. Thank you all for coming. It feels sometimes like a little bit of a niche market, but it actually should be such a huge part of our industry that it's nice to see people who are interested in it come out, and hopefully you'll spread the word to other people about how important this aspect of our industry is. So, to introduce our panel here at the, I'll start at the end, so that Scott, you can still be the last.
Go ahead, thanks.
So at the end there, we have Faith Erin Hicks, the cartoonist of Ward Ellesmere and Friends with Boys. She also has the Schuster Award-winning Zombies Calling, and her new book, Bigfoot Boy, with Jay Torres, who apparently didn't have the guts to show up.
No.
Yeah,
apparently is not feeling well. He has a throat thing, yeah. So we will give him a pass this one time. All right, so next we have Jack Brilio, who has been writing Scooby-Doo and also the Eisner-nominated Growing Up in Cambridge, which is a creator-owned book. Next to Jack, we have Willow Dawson, who is the artist of the Schuster-nominated No Girls Allowed, and also the creator of High Knit and Petticoats, also Schuster-nominated.
Yeah, this is about
Nellie McQuillan. It's fantastic. And last, but not least, he is Scott Chandler of Northwest Passage, the Eisner-nominated Two Generals, and the Schuster Award-winning Three Thieves series.
Whee.
So, excellent. Welcome.
I was slow, so let me put my mic up.
Right.
All right, so I'm just going to start off with some hard-hitting questions here, and then that'll hopefully lead to some discussion, and then you guys can ask some questions towards the end. So, Faith, I'll start with you. You've done your own, obviously your own cartooning, and you've also illustrated the writing of others. How much do you take from the experience of illustrating other people's writing to using your own cartooning, your own stories?
I like doing both. I really enjoy writing my own stories, and also I feel like when I write someone else's stories, there's a lot of opportunity there because I'm given the chance to perhaps tell a story that is very different from what I would personally choose to write for myself. I've just done this book with Jay Torres, Bigfoot Boy, which is the first of a three-book series. It's coming out September 1st, I believe. Small children love it, so please look it up. And Jay had a lot of, there was a lot in the story that was different from what I would have chosen for stories, but I probably would have chosen a different path just because I like to draw. Let me put it this way. Sometimes I don't want to be challenged in my drawing. Most of the time I do, but sometimes I don't. So, I don't have a lot of animals in my stories, for example, and I got to draw lots of animals in Bigfoot Boy, and that actually turned out to be really fun. So, I don't know why I was scared of drawing animals as characters. So, yeah.
Excellent. Jack, you've worked on Scooby-Doo, which is a licensed property, and obviously you've worked on your own book. What are the difficulties in writing for a licensed property and still maintaining your voice?
With Scooby-Doo and with Legion, you've got to be faithful to the properties, right? I mean, and I know with Scooby-Doo, I tried from what I remembered from Scooby-Doo, I remember the '60s, the original ones, and I wanted it to be faithful to that. Never mind the editorial. Back and forth that goes with any work for hire work that you do, and then obviously with licensed stuff, it's got to go to the licensees, right, and get approvals there. So there's that part of the process. So it's kind of nice when you're doing your own thing that doesn't come into play. So with Growing Up Enchanted, for example, it was it's really nice just coming up with the story that you want to tell. Rather than being directed. Now, not to say that one is better than the other, because I've enjoyed working in both venues, but it's certainly, doing a creator-owned series is far more liberating in terms of creativity-wise.
So I'm sure one pays better than the other.
Yes. Agreed. For sure.
And Scott and Willow, both of you have books that appeal to an educational audience, particularly the market of teachers looking for books for the classroom. How do you make a successful educational text without coming across as boring?
Well, I think inherently in comics it's a story, and that's really what turns something from a textbook into something that's going to captivate an audience, I think. Yeah, you're basically trying to create a story so that you're bringing kids into it. You're tapping into their experiences and their interests. And I think that teachers and librarians are really sort of moving in that direction instead of everything just being textbook-based and facts. A lot of it, very interesting stories.
Yeah, I would agree with that completely. I think the way to make a good educational comic is mostly just to not think of it as an educational comic.
Yeah.
If you're doing your job as a storyteller and you've got a book that's set, like a story that's set in a historical setting or in some kind of educational venue, that stuff's going to come through if you have done your research and done your homework and are telling the story correctly anyway. Those details are going to come through. So. I think just to make it an appealing story is what sells the book.
Okay, so further on that, for all of you, when writing for kids, how much do you consider what the kids want to read versus what the parents want their kids to read? Is that even a thought at all about the parents in the equation?
I guess I'll start. I find it, I know some writers, like Jay and I argue about this all the time, Jay who's not here. So I'm going to take over now and just say that he's wrong.
exactly.
But some people who write for children, like Jay has a really keen ability to, now I'm going to write a script for 9-year-olds. Now I'm going to write a script for 12-year-olds. Now I'm going to write a script for 15-year-olds. He knows the difference and can, pitch his writing just precisely. It's an amazing skill, and it must be an incredible help when you're dealing with publishers and stuff to be able to tell them like this is for this specific age group.
Well, publishers want that.
Publishers do want that, and it's a marketing thing, and like I say, it's probably a really practical skill to have. I don't really have that skill. When it's me, like most of us, I'm sure, as with most creative freelancers, you kind of work. At home alone or in a studio alone, and it's just you and the blank page or you and the blank monitor. And for me, at least, it starts with telling myself a story.
Yeah.
And if, if I happen to be writing for children, like the Three Thieves books, for instance, came about because I had kind of lost interest in fantasy as an adult reader. But I had two children. My older son is actually here in the front row. And as they started to get old enough to read and stuff, I started to kind of remember what it was I liked about fantasy storytelling as a kid. So when I'm writing one of the Three Thieves books, it's sort of me and my inner 10-year-old. And I'm just, as I've said in interviews and stuff, if it's something that appeals to my inner 10-year-old, it's in. If it doesn't, it's out. I don't intellectualize it too much. But it's really just what appeals to me. I hope it will appeal to other people and other kids. I don't think about the audience, parents or children, all that much. And maybe I should be, but it's just not how I do it.
I also don't think a lot about the audience so much. My editors actually help me quite a bit to get the tone of the language right, depending on the age group that I'm working with. So I'll pitch an idea, pitch a story, and then. Sometimes as we're working through, like the first book I did, No Girls Allowed, was not written by me, was written by Susan Hughes. She started with a script and they thought they would originally do a picture book for it. And then as they sort of went through it, they realized that it was so much more dynamic and, it certainly could be for an older age range. And then they decided they wanted to do a comic. They went back to their first decision to do a picture book. And then they went back to a comic, and that's when they brought me on. So I know that the age range for that book was being negotiated all through the process, at least to my understanding. And then with the Hyena and Petticoats book, I didn't know the actual for sure age range until the end. I knew sort of somewhere where it would be. And I've just put together, I'm working on a proposal for an informational picture book, and so a story, but with info in it. And that one, you know, originally was like, this will be from 4 to 6, and now they're sort of like, could this be for 7 to 10? Well, I'm not sure. So it kind of sometimes even through the entire writing process, the entire, you know, up to the point of artwork, that those decisions are still being kind of negotiated, throughout. My editors helped me a lot with this.
Yeah. I should clarify, too, that when Willow and I say we don't think that much about the audience, it's not in terms of disregarding them in terms of being clear. I mean, I'm always thinking about the audience in terms of making sure the story is clear and dramatic and stuff like that. It's just in terms of, you know, catering to a particular marketing niche, you know, that's where we're just, we'll let somebody else deal with that. You know?
Yeah. It's not our job, right? I agree with both of you there. I think really the only difference I see with writing for kids and not is that maybe in a story where for adults not geared towards kids, there may be an underlying theme. Not to say that there won't be an underlying theme in kids' stories, but maybe sometimes that theme turns into a lesson, and some sort of lesson instead
right.
of theme. And it's a slightly different thing, right? But otherwise, it's about creating a good story, right? It's about creating a good story that can be read by parents or for kids, so that there's no conflict between the two, and it's enjoyed by everyone. I remember, Scott, that you called it the Pixar principle, right?
That's my sort of name for the sort of theory that you know, not that what Pixar does is exclusively for kids by any means, but they sort of make their stuff so broadly appealing, but also so well crafted that you cannot deny the artfulness of it, so that it is, you know, appropriate for essentially anyone. I'm always bowled over by the level of, well, in most Pixar films, you can probably guess the one or two that I'm talking about. But the, just that, I read an interview once with someone from Pixar, I can't remember who, one of the directors, who said that, DreamWorks and the other animation studios try to make their films appealing for the wider audience, the adult audience, by putting in a lot of fart jokes and stuff like that. Pixar makes their films appealing to the broader adult audience by giving their characters adult problems.
Yeah.
And it's if you think about those films, it's absolutely true. So that's sort of what I describe. It's something I think about when I'm writing for all ages, for sure.
One thing that, just sort of going on that, when I do work going into schools and libraries and stuff and I talk to kids, I mean, it's a very multicultural group of kids. There's a lot of kids falling away from school, the educational sort of side of school. And I think, that's where my sort of interests lie in terms of what I'm trying to do. And so giving them adult problems, I think, is something that a lot of teachers and librarians are really looking for, are books for kids that are a little bit more adult, because we have had a very long history, I think, of kind of babying kids in terms of the stories that we create for them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this just kids at a very young age are often dealing with really serious stuff in their families or, you know, at school or health stuff, all kinds of things, right? And that doesn't have to mean that it's like it's not an adult book that we're babying down to kids. It's
right.
A kids book, but the themes are greater and bigger and relevant. Yeah. So whether it's historical stuff or fantasy, it has weight to it and substance to it. So adults will also pick up these books and enjoy them.
Sure.
Because they can relate as well.
One of the things that I find that is cool about comics and sort of about our three of us here are artists, you know, Faith, Willow, and I. Jack's a writer. But when you draw in a sort of simple, kind of design heavy, almost animated-y kind of style like Faith and Willow and I do, you can get away with more complex content because you're kind of selling it in a way that goes down easy, And that's one thing, my publisher, Kids Can Press, didn't have a lot of experience with graphic novels when I started working for them, and this is something that I've kind of convinced them of, is that, you know, it doesn't have to be simpler than prose. We can actually be a little more complex than a prose book aimed for the same audience would be, because we're making it go down easy with the nice, colorful, simple cartoons.
And there's so much in terms of comics and panels that you can do to reveal things, but not to scare people,
yes.
Right? To reveal things quietly and slowly, and you know, so it isn't something that a kid is going to come across a really terrifying scene in the middle of the book,
mm-hmm.
Right? There's ways of,
yeah.
of bringing those things out.
Sorry, no. I just really, that was an interesting tangent. I'm actually fairly new to specifically doing comics for kids. My books skew young, but I feel like that's actually what I enjoy writing and drawing. I don't, again, like everyone here, I don't typically think of an audience. I just go and write a story that is appealing to me. And for some reason, I just end up in this younger age range because it's just more fun, you know, like I like doing crazy, fun, cartoony, over-the-top books, and that's for whatever reason, that puts me in the kids category. Specifically, I've only written and drawn a book for specifically a younger audience once. I did this book for SLG Publishing called The Ward Ellesmere. It sold like 2 copies. because unfortunately, I wrote and drew it for myself as an 11-year-old. I wrote and drew my dream graphic novel for me at that age. And SLG only deals with the direct market, which is guys 35 years old. So, you know, that was not a book that ended up in the right market. That's kind of unfortunate when a book that is meant for the bookstore market or, you know, for the educational market. Because every time I give it to, you know, an 11-year-old girl, they are so excited to have this book. That's fun. But, the age range thing is very new to me. I primarily work, my main publisher is an American publisher called First Second, who are the graphic novel imprint of Macmillan. I've done a middle grade book, like this is all new, these terms are terms they have told me, so this is, all right, I'm just parroting what they're saying here. So I did a middle grade horror book for them, I just drew it, called Brain Camp, and that was, you know, kind of like, I guess, Christopher Pike, or one of the writers of this book was a writer on Are You Afraid of the Dark? Which you're all nodding your heads. I've never seen the show, but, you know, people have told me they enjoyed it as a child. And then I've done 2 young adult books for them. My most recent book, which came out in February, is Friends with Boys. It's about a 14-year-old girl who's been homeschooled all of her life, going into high school, public high school for the first time. A little bit autobiographical. I was homeschooled as well, and then experienced the joy of public high school. That was great. But I just wrote and drew this story because it was the story that I wanted to do. And then, you know, at the end of it, it was like, this is a YA book. And I was like, oh, thank you, publisher. Thank you for telling me that. That's awesome. I hope that means it sells more copies or whatever. This is all very new to me. Thinking, you know, I haven't had this conversation about age ranges with Jay. Like, Jay and I just did this Bigfoot book together. And I've had a lot of people come up to me or email me and say, so what, you know, like, what is the age range for this book, and I'm like,
that's one of the first things people ask about a book like this is for what ages.
And a lot of times, like I talk to librarians a lot. I went to California this year to do the American Library Association annual, and a lot of librarians, you know, they really wanted to know the age range of the book, and I would just say things like, well, it doesn't have any swearing in it, or, you know, there's no nudity, but, you know, someone does get punched in the face, because that's a tradition in my books.
Yeah. Yes.
It is a really difficult question. I realize I haven't actually introduced myself. I'm Jen, and I own The Dragon, which is a comic store in Guelph. I also founded the Joe Shuster Comics for Kids Award, and I'm also a teacher, so I wear many hats on this.
It should be noted that The Dragon won the Will Eisner Spirit of Retailing Award at Eisner's this year.
Woo!
It looked like Jen wasn't going to mention it, and somebody should mention it because it's an awesome store.
I feel awkward every time I mention it. I feel really weird about it. Anyway,
well, you just need me to just walk around with you. And,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, a lot of times parents will come in and ask, well, what's the age range on this book, or I'm looking for something for an 11-year-old. And it's not so much about age, it's about reading level, right?
Yes.
So it's,
yeah.
It's really
that's
difficult to then sort of steer them into, you know, well, sort of how are they reading, and then what do they like, because that's
maturity
far more
level,
important
right?
sometimes.
Yeah.
Level.
Yeah.
I get that a lot with, I did a book 2 years ago called Two Generals, which is not specifically a kid's book, but is being used in some high schools for educational purposes and stuff, and it seems to have caught on with that kind of school teenage audience, which is great. sometimes I get the question about it, you know, would this be okay for my 12-year-old? And you know, there's, you know, like, there's not a lot of swearing and there's no sex and stuff in it, but there's, you know, people getting their arms and legs blown off, and I never know quite what to say. I mean, I want to say, well, what 12-year-old?
Yes.
You know, like, which 12-year-old? You know,
what are they interested
you know,
in doing?
A mature 12-year-old,
yeah.
Certainly. You know, a lot of 12-year-olds, probably not.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, like you say, there's a, you know, I don't know how you pin an exact age on some of these things. I just don't.
It's very
yeah.
difficult.
It,
and
yeah.
I will say that Ward Ellesmere, I sold to a school as a classroom text for grade 8. So
oh, wonderful.
There you go.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So that was one of those two.
Yeah, that was one of those two.
Yeah.
Thank
you.
So, yeah, so I mean, obviously, you know, you wrote it for yourself, but it's being used with, you know, 13, 14 year olds very successfully, that it also appeals to them. So,
wonderful.
Again, you know, books have quite a range of that would be interested in it. I think sometimes it's content driven more than it is necessarily age driven.
Yeah, I always get worried sometimes, like, okay, if I specifically set out, like, okay, you mentioned Jay has this amazing ability, and we'll just assume that he does because
right.
you're not here, to, you know, to target a certain age group.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like almost, if I sat down and was like, okay, I'm going to write a book for 10-year-olds, I feel like that would consume the project.
Yeah.
That I would be so obsessed with writing a book for 10-year-olds, I would ignore the fact that I need to write a good book.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. That.
Why restrict yourself? Like, why do
yeah.
that? I think Zendax said it best, right? Right. You know, that's just marketing, right?
That's
the famous quote.
That's
right?
The marketing department's
yeah.
problem.
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah that's, mm-hmm. I write books of books.
Yeah.
right.
Yeah. It's probably good Jay's not here. We'd just
yeah.
be arguing.
Yeah.
yeah. I will say, just to do a random general plug, and I mean, I'm sure you guys all feel this way too. I really feel like there's a gap in the comic book market. You know, there, as weird as it seems, you know, there's this mentality outside of comics that comics are for kids, and I don't see a lot of content being created for kids, and I get frustrated with that because I want to recommend stuff, and I mean, there is more now certainly than there was 10 years ago.
The contradiction there,
yeah.
the public perception,
yeah.
it persists after, you know, 25 years
yeah.
after Mouse. That
yeah.
you know. The comics are for kids, and also the
conversely,
that
there's hardly
any material
yeah.
out there for kids.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah.
it's the strangest thing.
But conversely, there's also the problem of, you know, us saying, yeah, it's an all ages book, or it's for
yeah.
everyone.
Yeah.
Why
yeah.
is it so hard to tell people that it's for everyone?
Yeah. Right? And I mean, it is changing. I mean, you know, when I first started getting interested in breaking into comics 20 years ago, you would never say you were doing a comic for kids. I mean, you know, Jeff Smith, when Bones started up, you know, was very careful to, you know, frame it as not a comic for kids because it was the kiss of death.
Yeah.
And, you know, now...
And he's the one that broke
yeah, exactly,
the market,
yeah.
Really.
20 years
yeah.
later, Bone is an enormous bestseller for Scholastic.
10 million
yeah.
copies.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, that's how much things have changed in 20 years, and maybe, you know, in another 10 or 20, it'll be even better. But, I mean, it is certainly changing and getting better, but it's the kind of change that happens slowly, I guess.
At the same time, we're fighting this perception as well that comics are for kids because it's dumbed down material with a low
yeah.
reading level, things
right.
like that. And that's something that we have to work really hard on the retail front to overcome.
Yeah.
The people coming
yeah.
in.
It's all about creating a good story, like
yeah.
I said. It's, you know, I talked earlier about the Pixar principle, but I like talking about an enjoyment scale, right? There are certain levels to anything, right? That, you know, you can tell a story that has, you know, a really good plot. And, you know, you have a story that's a really good plot, it'll be right here, right, on a scale. 1 to 10, whatever you want to talk about. But now, okay, now that story has some really great characters, some, you know, a lot of depth to those characters. Well, oh, all of a sudden, enjoyment level, I think, my personal opinion,
yeah.
goes up a notch.
Yeah.
you have a theme? Oh, great. You have a lesson? Oh, great. I mean, think about the stories you love.
Yeah.
And I think about that all the time. What are the stories that, like, you know, harken back to me as, you know, as the classics in my head?
Yeah.
Usually they're the ones that have, you know, have a great plot. They might even have just a really basic plot, but they have character, theme, and all the rest.
Yeah. My editor at Kids Can is wonderful, and she's so good, and she knows comics, and she understands the language, and all that stuff. But even she was surprised when we started working together, you know, when we started, you know, going through the script together and going through the art together. She was surprised at how, you know, completely in what complex terms I am thinking through, you know, everything in terms of, you know, visual metaphors and, you know, just all, you know, she was surprised, you know, even someone who was already pre-sold on comics, at just the number of creative decisions that go into every page and how complicated the medium really is.
And that's another part of that enjoyment skill.
Yeah.
The writer and artist working at the same,
yeah,
on the same page and doing both,
yeah,
both things, right?
Yeah.
On the script and visual.
And I mean, it sort of sucks because if you make a really good comic, people aren't going to notice the skill.
you know,
it's like watching a really good movie,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You're just sort of like, oh, this is a really good movie, but
they don't consciously notice it, but on some level, they, you know.
But I mean, you know, like comics have this reputation of being easy. Like,
Like
you mentioned Jeff Smith, and I was so embarrassed about this. I watched this interview with him that TVO, you know, our local TVO did.
Yeah.
And they had like a couple of different experts on their panel,
right.
And this lady was interviewing him, and it was like, okay, comics are popular now. Are they good enough for the classroom? And this one lady was just crawling all over him, talking about how, you know, comics were too easy, they weren't reading, and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I mean, I wanted to apologize to him on behalf of Canada.
Right.
You know, I was so embarrassed.
Yeah.
This is Jeff Smith.
Yeah.
Well, and I think one of the things is that, this is a bit of a tangent, but like there's literacy with words, and that's been pushed so much in schools, but there's also visual literacy, and our world is shifting and changing. More and more are we shifting towards visual literacy. So, you know, it's a wonderful medium, it's a wonderfully sophisticated medium to get messages across to kids who may not have a handle on reading the way that other kids do, or may not have a handle on language the way that other kids do. So it's an amazing way to get inspirational stories out to kids and information out to them.
It's comics is the best of both worlds, right?
Yeah,
right. The literary medium and the visual medium, is the various visual mediums. It's,
mm-hmm.
You know, that's what's so awesome about it. That's why I love writing.
I was talking about this Thursday at the Canada Graphic Novels panel, where I was talking about, I think most of us here are with sort of mass market book publishers and not with traditional comics publishers, and because of that, you get a lot of the civilian audience, you know, that sort of wider audience that we've been talking about, and sometimes I get the question, you know, why comics for this material? And my answer, like particularly with Two Generals, which is the book I was talking about Thursday, was that you can always reach, like you say, for the best tool in the toolbox. You know, if there's a scene where text is going to get it across the best, then you go with text. You know, there are scenes where you don't have to have as much or any text and just let the pictures tell a sort of emotional story. In Two Generals, there's a couple of times where you know, some complex military maneuver needs to be described, so I switch to a map with arrow. You can do whatever needs to be done to describe that story as clearly as possible. You know, why that seems simplistic to people, I have no idea. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been doing workshops with students this year, and I've seen a lot of, you know, we look at and we look at, you know, panels and transitions,
sure,
and character and mood, and the kids from like grade 1 to 6 is what I'm doing this for, and they are really, really good at articulating things like how the color yellow like creates a,
absolutely,
mood of happiness, things like that. Like they really pick up on that, those visual cues. Their visual literacy is amazing when they're reading comics, and they get these ideas of character and time and you know, all sorts of things from just looking at the pictures, and then combine it with the words, you have this amazing tool that gets kids excited about reading,
yeah,
it overcomes their fears of reading, and you know, it really develops them as in all sorts of ways. It's a fantastic medium.
Yes.
Yeah, I think everyone here is pre-sold.
Pre-sold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If anyone's still on the fence.
Yeah.
Get up right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And we'll do a 30-second debate.
Right.
So, I mean, obviously, all of you have talked about, you know, tone of voice. None of you sort of talk down to your audience, which makes your work really strong for that audience. But what are some of the other elements that you think make a good kids' book?
I mean, an obvious one is a youthful protagonist. Other than that, I don't really make a lot of distinction between the stuff I write for a young audience and the stuff I write for a general audience, really. I mean, there's been a couple of times in the Three Thieves books where they have, you know, said, reminded me, you know, of the audience. You know, just something, you know, scale this back just a little bit, will you? But other than that, it really doesn't play into my decisions all that much.
I would say art style. I think that's a big element. And, you know, Scott, you talked a little bit about, you know, the more cartoony art style. But, like, I know when I drew Bigfoot Boy with Jay, it was a younger skewing book. I'm not sure what age range he wrote it for. I'm assuming under 10. I wish he was here. Damn you, Jay. Anyway, but so, and I made the deliberate decision to change my art style a little bit. Like, it's still obviously drawn by me, but it's a little simpler. The art is a little more clear. Clear, I guess, a little less detailed. And at the same time, I was also drawing a young adult book for First Second. You know, the target audience for that is teenagers. So the characters looked more, like, proportionally were more adult. The art was more detailed. And also that book was black and white, whereas Bigfoot Boy is in color. And I think color is something else. Like, I think in like a teenage book, like, if you have a black and white book, it tends to look like it's a little bit older as opposed to a book that's in color. I know with Friends with Boys, originally First Second was insistent that it be in color, and I did not want it to be in color. I wanted it to be black and white with gray toning. And then finally my editor was like, you know, maybe we should make it black and white because, you know, we do find that color books tend to skew younger. And, you know, of course the best example of this is Bone, right? Like, Bone is a black and white book, and then Scholastic released these color editions, and all of a sudden it's a kid's book.
Yeah, there was a bit of discussion when I first signed my contract for to do the Three Thieves books, you know, about doing it in two color, because that was sort of a little bit more in my wheelhouse. I think most of us come from a sort of an indie comics black and white tradition, and now here we are. But you know, we quickly, like, it took us about 5 minutes to discard that idea, and like, no, we gotta go full color on this.
I sent Scott a few. We both are doing most for kids can. Yeah. I sent Scott a few emails, and I'm like, I'm coloring this. It's my very first time coloring my own comic. Please give me some tips. Help me.
And, like,
Scott was very gracious.
I'm fairly new to color too, because, like I say, I come from a very black and white tradition, so it's something I've had to pick up, because I wanted to color the books myself and not have somebody else do it. So I'm kind of learning on the fly a little bit still too, after three books.
Always learning.
Growing up enchanted, it's in black and white, but I agree, it beats
color.
Definitely.
What else you got for us? Anything good?
Let's see. Chop, chop. I think we've gone over a lot of the stuff that I wrote down.
Okay, want to go to audience?
One more question.
Right.
Which I think you kind of already touched on, but do you think it's important to have a relationship with children to effectively write them?
Well, like I said, I would never even have considered doing this series at all if I hadn't had children. My son Miles, stand up and give a wave, Miles. I've referenced you twice.
Oh, no.
There he is.
Oh,
stay there. Nice. Well done. Nice job, buddy. All right, he's back. When Miles was younger, he got the Fisher-Price Castle for Christmas, and he asked if I could write a story with a castle in it, which was the genesis of the Three Thieves books. It's grown. It's going to be 7 books. It became not a very simple story with a castle in it, but if it hadn't been for that, I would have been content to just continue writing for a more general audience. So for me, you know, my relationship with my own children is definitely what's led me into writing for kids.
I don't have any kids, but I'm a really big kid. I'm not sure if I'll ever grow up entirely. I'm working on it, but not too quickly. I think that just doing art, comics, being a creator kind of keeps you youthful in a lot of ways.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, I do think so, comparatively to a lot of other, you know, sort of lines of work.
I turned 40 this year, and I can tell you that a lot of other 40-year-old males are pretty beaten down by life at this point. And maybe I'm that way too, but I certainly don't feel that way. It definitely, I feel like it's keeping me young to a certain extent.
Comics keeps me as a kid at heart, and I feel the same way. And when I started growing up Enchanted, or any of the all ages stuff that I did, this was before Lucas, my son, was born. But I did have family, nieces and nephews for growing up Enchanted specifically, was the genesis of a few of the characters that, like Olivia and Anto. So definitely plays a part. Yeah. You know, what do we write about? We write about what we know, right? If we're not researching.
Yep.
So yeah, for sure.
Yeah, what Willow said is very apt. I am a big kid. You know, one of these days, I guess I'll grow up. My dad likes to say, "You're never too old to have a happy childhood."
That's awesome.
Yeah, and I kind of feel like that. You know, yeah, I write and draw cartoons or comics for a living. I'm a big fan of kids. I don't have any of my own. I am a kid. I don't know, what can I say? Although I have a kid who pays my rent. Not that much of a kid.
Kids shouldn't pay rent.
Yeah, that should just be a rule.
You
stay a kid forever, you should never have to pay rent.
That would be nice.
Everyone would be in earnest.
Works for me.
All right, so questions? Anyone have any?
Sorry, I'm going to bring it back to the question you probably don't like, but about the ages one.
Sure.
My nephew's going to be 6, and he loves superheroes, so I'm trying to get him to the comic book store. He gets so excited.
Sure.
But I cannot let him touch any of my Batman comics because he'll open up to a page, and he'll freak out.
Yep.
So how do I introduce him to these comics? Like, I know he'd love them, but when I go to the comic book store, I can't find anything. I find Futurama and Simpson comic books, but...
You're looking for superhero comics specifically?
Well, he does like superheroes, but I don't see anything at this point. I'm going to give him to introduce him to that world
It's tough because this is something we in the industry talk about all the time. How the superhero publishers have just abandoned the young audience.
Which is so disappointing considering how many kids.
And every now and then they'll put out something that is supposed to be designed for all ages and it doesn't sell very well and they cancel it immediately. But it's because they're going through the direct market and not the other markets that have emerged where people are starved for material for young audiences. This is a hot button issue for those of us who work in comics.
I know someone in the back said Tiny Titans. There's definitely books out there. I think what we're lamenting is there's not enough. There's a total imbalance.
Tiny Titans for sure. I was going to mention that Scott Robbins is here.
Yes.
The author of A Parent's Guide to the Best Kids Comics.
Yes, which is something. Which is full. It's full of recommendations.
Parents Guide to the Best Kids Comics is great, and it's got write ups on a ton of books, and also if you like this, you'll also like these other books. It's broken down by age range.
He's so excited. He loves to dress up as Batman. I'm like, I can't give you any of these stories.
There's
a few Batman Brave and the Bold collections that's in the cartoony style from Batman animated Brave and the Bold series. So Batman Brave and the Bold.
Brave and the Bold.
Yeah, it's based on the cartoon. It's got a nice...
When I wrote this book, I had a really hard time finding superhero comics that were actually appropriate for kids. They're just you know, like, and the problem is that Marvel and DC have certain lines that are that are specific for kids, but they fall out of print so quickly. They have one small print run, and when those sell out, it's no longer available anymore. So,
might want to check your library. I think, yeah, like, I've noticed that, well, I have a great library in Halifax, but, like, they'll have the Marvel Adventure books. There's a really awesome Japanese artist team called Guri Hari, and they did these amazing Marvel Adventure books. Like, they did a Thor one, they did an X-Men one.
They disappear from libraries, though.
Oh, do they?
Because the kids love them.
Yeah.
Our school library is, like, we put them in, and they're gone, because they just disappear because the kids want them, right?
Yeah.
Well,
try your library, though. Like, you know, I'm sure that...
The library
has a good, and, you know, ask librarians, they would probably be able to help you.
If you are interested in the Marvel Adventure stuff, the Red Spine stuff, it's all going out of print, so,
of course.
Get it
quickly.
You have to get it now, because I keep trying to reorder it, and it comes up totally nonstop. So Marvel has clearly canceled that entire line and is restarting with their newer stuff. But I was going to mention Marvel, somebody put out these great oversized hardcovers of various characters like Iron Man, Spider-Man, Thor. They're fantastic. They're picture books as opposed to comics, but they're a really great introduction, especially for a six-year-old who's like, where picture books are a little bit more accessible at that age. They're really great, and they still feel like a comic because you've got that superhero character. So there are these beautiful, like, oversized.
They're DK.
DK, there you go.
But I share your frustration, though. My boys are 9 and 6, and you know, they love superheroes. You know, I took them to see the Avengers. They, you know, they're you know, they love the
Hulk. Dark Knight.
And yeah, I didn't take them to see Dark Knight. But it's difficult for me to explain to them why most superhero comics are not for them. And I mean, like you know, there are the odd example we can pick out of a superhero. But you know, I work in comics, and even I'm not sometimes aware of them. That's how quickly they sometimes come and disappear and aren't really marketed very well.
I think DC has 6 books total. And Marvel has 2. You know, I lamented on Twitter a while back and said, wouldn't it have been great if the New 52 had been a New 52 for all ages instead of what they did? Could you find one out of that 52 that you could say it was all ages?
No.
Hard to say, right? Impossible, right?
Darwin Cook is fond of saying that you shouldn't have to specify that something is an all ages Superman story. There shouldn't be any other kind. Superman. You know? But it's, you know, people go off when he says it because all the, you know, middle aged fans want their, you know, gritting of teeth and, you know, whatever.
And he did New Frontier, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, that did as an cartoon.
Yeah.
Just to draw a frustrating personal analogy, I do this webcomic. And there's also a little self-published book, and in the future there will be more published books, called The Adventures of Superhero Girl. And it is a gag strip. I guess it's all ages. There's one scene where characters go to a party and there's alcohol, so. But it's very goofy, very silly, over the top. And I specifically drew it because I looked at what DC was doing with a character like Supergirl. And I felt really kind of exhausted by that. You know, I was interested in the idea of a young female superhero, you know, exploring her powers, dealing with just being a young person in a city. And I went and got a Supergirl book from the library, and there was, like, practically no pages where she wasn't thrusting her assets at me, put it mildly. So I was really frustrated by that, and I just went out and made this Adventures of Superhero Girl comic because I did not see what I wanted in superhero comics represented by what was being published. and then eventually DC noticed and liked my Superhero Girl comic and asked me to pitch a Supergirl story, which they probably rejected.
Did put out a miniseries called Supergirl, I think Cosmic Adventures in the Fifth.
Oh yeah, that one's too. Yeah.
Which is fantastic.
Yeah.
It's really
And apparently it did not sell.
It did not sell well at all, no. I've had some discussions with the higher-ups at DC about specifically a comic for girls aged, say, like 8 to 11, of which there's nothing. They recently put out a Wonder Woman collection from the Wonder Woman Adventures stuff that had come out with DC Adventures. It's reprints. It apparently sold terribly, and so now there's all We're still in discussions, though. I'm working on it. I'm trying really hard.
I'm always reminded of, you know, to speak of Darwin Cook again, him and Jay Bone years ago pitched a Wonder Woman series aimed at young girls, which would have been, if they had marketed it outside of the direct market and into bookstores and stuff, would have sold like hotcakes.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a crime. Like, I think about that, I would read that book. It, you know, it would be so good. Yeah. You know, and if I had young girls, it is a crime that kind of thing doesn't happen with those characters.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Sure. Do you think that it's the genre of superheroes that attracts young people, or do you think it's the characters specifically from Marvel and DC that attract
young
characters?
I think it's the characters for me. Like, I love the idea of being a superhero. You know, like, I'm 5'2". I'm not very strong.
Yeah.
I can't run very fast, but, you know, I love the idea of just being able to fly or being powerful, never being afraid, you know?
But
like,
does that character
have
to be Supergirl or Wonder Woman, or could it be something completely new?
Yeah, that's a good point, because I look at,
yeah,
say, the Sailor Moon mangas, and I see a lot of that. In like a lot of the same attraction in that. And, you know, I've heard it said very often that Sailor Moon is superheroes for girls, basically. So, yeah, that's a good question.
I think with DC and Marvel, past little while in film, that their brands have gotten a lot stronger. So I think that if we asked that question maybe 10, 20 years ago, you know, when there was huge gaps in any other media where you could find superhero stuff, I mean, now if you want Superman, if you want Spider-Man, you know, sadly, you don't, you know, there are superhero fans that aren't reading comics anymore.
Yeah.
That wasn't the case,
yeah,
even, what, 5, 10 years ago, right? So I think the brand's getting stronger, so I think that is changing. I'm leaning more towards, you know, maybe you're right, that they're looking for the brand, they're looking for the Superman.
I think it's a bit of both. I mean, maybe it's kind of a cop-out answer, but I do think the idea of power is attractive to children. I think, you know, something that's more powerful than their dad or mom is, you know, kind of appealing. But, you know, that said, like, if Darwin and Jay had done something like that Wonder Woman series but just made up their own character, it wouldn't have been quite the same as if they had done it with Wonder Woman.
That's right.
You know,
yeah,
there's something about those traditional characters that are so much part of our culture that to utilize them in a particularly effective way like that is, you know, it's doubly effective.
Which is, like, that's a really interesting point. Like, some of the best superhero stories I've read are not Wonder Woman or Superman stories. Like, I'm thinking specifically of Astro City by Kurt Busiek,
which
is an amazing superhero comic.
Yeah.
And yet, and it kind of riffs on,
you
know, the traditional
on the
Marvel,
on all the
DC, especially superheroes. And, you know, like, I mean, maybe these stories would have even more impact if it was, you know, Superman instead of the Samaritan or something like that. Like, those are great superhero stories.
Let the little guy in the back go.
The gentleman at the back.
Yeah. You don't need powers to be a superhero. Like, look at Batman, for example.
Yeah, that's a really good
point.
Or, Iron Man, right? He's just really smart, and he was smart enough to build himself an awesome suit.
I think we forget about the super.
Yeah.
The word superhero. I think the important word is actually hero.
Is hero.
Yeah.
These are stories about heroes. Probably one more reason why we lament some of the new stuff. You know, that's questionable.
that's a good point. Good job back there, little guy.
Yeah.
For sure, hold on.
Well said.
True.
Well said.
So I was wondering if you could talk about how you as writers and artists go about competing it with, like, Call of Duties, where you've got the immediacy, kids are, like, into the cultural violent kind of entertainment, and you've got this quieter form, whether it's through the comic books or writing, and you're not necessarily going to be writing the action, and you kind of have to allow that to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think about it as specifically as that, but I think, like, I mean, I understand what you're saying about the violence versus, like, what we do, which, you know, might be more quiet. I feel like kids who are checking out video games are going to then, you know, happen across this educational video game that's really cool and has, like,
you know, lots of information in it, and then this one, and then this one, and then they're going to find the comic book version of this one, and then they're going to find that, and then they're going to eventually kind of come into our world as well. Like, I think it's all very kind of circular. So I think even kids, playing, I forget the name of the one, but where you're just going around, you know, shooting video games or whatever.
It's
I think,
all of them.
Yeah, well, I like them, right? Yeah. But I think, you know, I don't think that kids' interests are that limited. I think that there's a much wider range of stuff that they're interested in. And I know there's, I did some work for McGraw-Hill, Ryerson, which is an educational textbook publisher, and one of the women who was one of the teachers on the educational advisory committee, I know that she was actually, she has sons, and they all watch these video games, and she, you know, felt that it was okay for them to play those video games because they were having conversations in the family around that stuff.
Yeah.
So it really, a lot of it has to do with environment too, right? And you kind of have to trust that parents, you know, kids are checking this stuff out at other people's houses, but then at school they're getting this, you know, these graphic novels shown to them, and they're getting this other stuff. So.
Yeah, that's pretty much where I was going to go too. I mean, kids are better at sort of multitasking than we really give them credit for. I have really never felt any sort of sense of. People are always telling me I should feel a sense of competition. You know, how do you compete with video games and all the stuff that kids are into these days? But particularly since I've had children, I've been reminded just how long the days are when you're a kid. I mean, you can sit down and play video games for 2 hours, and then they'll get bored of that, and then one of my kids will go pick up a book, and the other will go outside and play in the sandbox, There's a lot of time when you're a kid to be into a lot of different things. And, you know, sometimes, you know, I don't have to bug them a lot of the time to stop playing games. They'll just get bored and stop and go pick up something else. And if it's a comic, good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
I was saying, it's certainly a different time than you know, when we were growing up, right? And, you know, we wanted to watch cartoons, it was Saturday morning, right?
Right.
And now if you're particularly into cartoons, you any time,
yeah,
you know, digitally, streaming, you know, DVDs,
yeah,
et cetera. So I think that's it for all of them. Video games are the same. It's the same way. Comics are the same. So it's I think us as older people, it's we're stressed for time, and you know, we feel like, where's the time to do all that? But I think you're right. Kids have a lot. More,
I mean,
time
sometimes
to be able to jump around.
Miles will tell you. Sometimes I'm up and down his back about how much he plays video games. But it's because, like you say, it's because I'm busy. And I'm like, I see someone spend 2 hours playing Minecraft. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, you know, man, if I had 2 hours, you know. But he's got all day. You know. So he doesn't. Like I say, it's it's a different perspective.
In terms of, I work with kids a lot, like basically my whole life, so I think a lot of times they get given this rap that they're not, maybe not comprehending as much as they think they are, and they don't understand things as much as people, like older people think we are. We tend to talk down to them.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering what kind of situations you come into when you come up with a story or a book where the theme itself is something that can be catered to anyone, and then the publisher might say, well, I don't believe that this is appropriate for kids. Or maybe they feel like it's too mature, even though for you, you might feel like.
I've never had that experience.
Yeah.
Have you guys?
Or maybe like they an older, like, demographic group or something.
I've mentioned a couple times in my book Two Generals, which is a nonfiction account of my grandfather's experiences in the Second World War. And I got hooked up with the folks McClellan and Stewart in 2007, and you know, we did the deal to do this book, and they were originally going to put it out through Tundra Books, which is their children's book line, and they wanted to get into graphic novels, and it just seemed obvious to them that that's the side of the company that they would get into it in. I didn't put up much of a fuss about that because I knew it was a book that I thought would be important for young people to read. When I turned in the script, I don't know what they were expecting, maybe a talking puppy in a musical number or something, but they quickly decided this isn't for children, you know. So, you know, so fortunately, there's a lot of other divisions of the company. They hemmed and hawed for a couple of days and decided, what are we going to do about this? And then they kicked it over to the adult side and said, you know, this is, you know, a more appropriate place for this, which was a good decision and was kind of what I was hoping would happen all along. So, I mean, I've definitely had that experience. But even once it got to the adult side, there was the question of, well, you know, do we put it in our children catalog? Do we put it in our adult catalog? Do we market aggressively to schools? If so, what about all the smoking that's going on in the story? You know what I mean? There's a lot of stuff that, I mean, like we said earlier, we don't necessarily think about this stuff when we're creating the stories, but you hand it to the marketing department, and they're like, what are we going to do with this now?
It was nominated for the Schuster Comics for Kids Award.
Well, that's true, and that turned some heads, and people asked me if I was bothered by that, and I said no. I mean, the idea from the very beginning was that it's a book that I would want, you know, I certainly didn't want to dissuade older people from reading it from adults, but I mean, it's definitely, I mean, the whole genesis of the project was to have something to be able to give my boys when they're old enough to explain some of the family history. So the voice that book is written in is very much sort of me explaining to a younger person, here's what happened. So it didn't bother me at all when that ended up in the Comics for Kids
game. I was really concerned with book two a bit, Growing Up Enchanted, for me, because the theme I was covering was the concept of death and Oleana dealing with that for the first time.
Yeah.
So the marketing side of me, I guess, was in there saying, well, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? And I hopefully allowed my creative side to take over and just tell the tale I want to tell about that. But it's a very good point.
I did have one experience with something in a book. Okay, in Bigfoot Boy, the story is that there's this 10-year-old boy and he finds a totem in the forest next to his grandmother's house that turns him into a Bigfoot. So he transforms through the course of the story, and of course, when he transforms, his clothes get ripped off. So there's.
Right.
There is so much nudity in this book. I drew one scene, one panel, where he's running away, and I showed him from behind, and there was a butt. And I thought, great, kids love butts.
Sure.
Butts are hilarious.
Yeah.
And they told me to put a bush in.
Really?
So, no butts allowed.
That was a guaranteed laugh.
I know.
Guaranteed laugh.
Actually, my editor called me. And she said, I'm really sorry, but they wanted to hopefully sell it to the Scholastic catalog, their catalog
yeah.
that they send around to schools. And she said, I'm sorry, but Scholastic has a rule, there are no butts allowed.
No butts allowed. There is here.
No butts. I put a modesty bush in. So there's a modesty bush.
That's the other thing with mass market publishers that we all have the experience with is that, there's all the considerations of secondary publishing and foreign rights and all this. It can get fairly political.
So apparently the crowd is getting restless outside.
It seems
they
like,
they want to
yeah.
kick us out and right. come in here and apparently talk about something more important. But thank you all so much for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And enjoy the rest of your show.